Up next, obesity and overeating with Dr. Chris Gorman and Brendan Beiser.
Thank you very much, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here to give you condition of the day with my, again, better half and I guess an actor, Brendan. Brendan, tell me how you're doing.
It's funny, I was just listening to Richard call our segment correctly, condition of the day. It might feel like a week after you've listened to us, though. Maybe that's where the confusion comes in.
Could very well be, Brendan.
I actually, thank you for asking how I am. I'm much better now. Just before we came on the air, I was playing soccer, and I actually got kicked in the nuts. I don't know if I can say that on air or not, but I did. And I don't know if that's ever happened to you, Doctor, but to use the word uncomfortable is putting it lightly.
Yeah, it's sort of almost a tingling sensation is what I remember. But it, you know, I don't think that's what we're here to. I want to talk about overeating, which is in the new DSM-5 going to be called binge eating disorder. And it's essentially people that are eating and they feel like they're out of control, eating a lot of food, but not using any compensatory behavior like exercise or vomiting or laxative use, which would then make it bulimia nervosa. And not that I'm encouraging any of this, but I think it's a very important condition for us to be looking at. But what are your thoughts, Brendan?
My thoughts are right off the top. You're using some awfully big words today.
I apologize, but I'm trying to reach our audience, and you're just going to have to try to keep up.
Yes, monosyllabic works best for me. I was looking up, actually, the term obesity and its definition is defined as a medical condition in which excess body fat has accumulated to the extent that it may have an adverse effect on health, leading to reduced life expectancy and or increased health problems. Now, Doctor, I don't know if you know this or not, but since 2008, more than 1.4 billion adults 20 and older are overweight. Of these, over 200 million men and nearly 300 million women are considered obese.
Well,
go ahead.
No, I don't want to interrupt you when you're going off on a tangent. It's important to not try to rein you in.
Maybe I'm still reeling from the effects from soccer.
Yeah, could very well be. Go on, please.
I was just going to give you some more stats. Did you know that, in fact, in your average, let's just say your average fast food meal, how many calories are in an average worth of calories? Is a day's worth of calories exist in one average fast food meal? That's about 3 days worth of fat and maybe 3 to 3.5 times the need for sodium that you would have in one meal. Did you know that?
Well, I did not specifically know that, but I do know this, that we live in a culture that promotes eating a lot of food. If you go into the average supermarket in America, there are over 47,000 food items, and 85% of those food items are made from corn. And you know, really the big change for us is in the last 50 years we've had a secure supply of food. The prior 100,000 years we were traipsing around the Serengeti trying to find anything that we could eat, making sure that we weren't getting eaten at the same time. No Nike Airs, no minivans, just looking for the food and hoping that you wouldn't become somebody else's lunch. And you know, it was really, that's why we eat fast and we like fatty, sugary foods, because it gives fast energy. But if you've got an abundance of food, it causes a lot of problems.
Well, it sure can. In fact, it can lead to type 2 diabetes. In fact, it can lead to things like obstructive sleep anemia, certain types of cancer, osteoarthritis. These are heart disease, common conditions that arise or arouse out of. Well, I think arise. I think that's correct. Arise yeah. Out of and from obesity.
Well, that's true, and I think that, you know, I wonder if we'll ever get to the point where people have their obesity handled to some extent by understanding that it may have something to do with anxiety, and people are trying to quell their anxiety and maybe getting the help they need for their anxiety, and what's really distressing them, you know, might help also.
Well, I think that's interesting because you sometimes, when I see somebody, if they're walking down the street and they happen to be, I don't know, heavy set, let's just say that, I don't necessarily think about what's behind that, because that's clearly not healthy, carrying that much weight. Somebody who's excessive.
Absolutely.
And I think what's behind that, but what you're suggesting is there's more than just like being hungry. It's what's driving that hunger. Maybe they're hiding behind food.
Brendan, it sounds like material for another show. I want to turn it back to Richard and thank you again for helping me with Condition of the Day.
I'm Richard J. Dalton, Jr. In the studio today, we'll be interviewing Scott Andrews about diet and depression. Scott has been working in the fitness and nutrition business for 10 years. He teaches at the Institution for Holistic Nutrition and has a successful consultation business at the Y in downtown Vancouver. His clients range from people recovering from chemotherapy to ultra athletes, and he's recognized as a local expert in performance conditioning and weight loss through the use of a Paleolithic approach. For counseling people in their optimal performance and vitality, he includes techniques for stress management and lifestyle modification with his healthy eating advice. Welcome to Beautiful Mind, Scott.
Thanks, Richard.
So are certain food groups mood elevators?
Yeah, when you think of food mood elevators, think of two things. Basically, one that's high in tryptophan. We think of tryptophan basically high in serotonin. So the basically tryptophan foods, we look at things that are dairy, oatmeal, and even bananas. And second thing is what's called folic acid. And we think of basically more of neural development in young children. But folic acid also helps to stimulate serotonin as well. And those are things found in leafy greens, such as Swiss chard and kale.
And can some foods boost our levels of endorphins?
Yeah, so we think of basically endorphins, we think of things that help have a release of energy, and basically we get that from sex, drugs, and sugar, so everything but rock and roll, basically. And look, as far as sugars goes, that we do have a craving for them too, and we have these things called opiate receptors in our brain that get latched on when we have things that are really sweet, so we crave those foods.
Right, I see. So do blood sugar levels play a role in depression?
Quite intensely. Right now we're dealing with a syndrome called the metabolic syndrome, and that means is that we've got a lot of sugar in our body but not a lot of insulin to push that sugar into our tissues, into our muscles for energy use. So that really does cause a degrade in energy that gets to the brain for mental health.
I see. And so then that can actually lead to depression. That is it tied in with a feeling of lethargy, and is that a
huge
factor?
The biggest symptoms is when you have metabolic syndrome is that you're looking for a snack right after you eat a large meal. You wake up tired. You have no energy to get to the day. You're looking for a pick-me-up. As we right know that the brain only runs off sugar, so without sugar it can't function properly.
I see. And so what leads to metabolic syndrome?
So when we have foods that are really high in sugars and we're constantly eating those foods, basically means that we get these rise of sugar levels, and we basically get this sensitizing tissues that are not taking in the sugar properly because we have too much of it. So people that are starting a day off with croissants and eating high sugary foods all day long.
I see. Okay.
It's also known as type 2 diabetes as well.
I see. Now, are there power foods for people who suffer from depression?
Yep. Basically, when I think of power foods, I'm looking at things that have high quality foods, and we're looking at things that have no empty calories. So things like croissants and bagels, they have no nutrition at all. So basically looking at juicing vegetables is big, using hemp, which is high in protein and omega-3 fats, as well as nuts and seeds. Those are pretty much the powerful foods that we can eat.
And what about supplements? Are there supplements that can help people with depression?
Yeah, right now we're looking at omega-3 is shown to be low levels in people with depression. So we look at people across the board that have depression. If they supplement with omega-3, we see a huge rise. Right now, his doctor named Doran Gathel showing that supplementation, we see a better handling of depression, does help.
Okay. Okay, and so how can one choose their omega-3 supplements?
Pretty much when we look at omega-3, it breaks down into two constitutions, one called EPA and second called DHA. Really, EPA looks more on cardiac health, and DHA is more for brain health. So we look at supplements for omega-3s. You really want to make sure we get high DHA levels, more so than EPA. Too much EPA can actually decrease effects of DHA in the body, which is really important for the brain.
Now, is there then a certain ratio that you should be looking for then?
Normally we look for basically two parts to one part, DHA to EPA.
Okay. DHA to EPA, yeah, 2 to 1.
Exactly. And those are usually more found in the pharmaceutical grade omega-3s.
So, for example, maybe 400 to 200 or something like that.
Actually, that's right on. Normally, we want about 1 to 3 grams omega-3 a day.
Okay.
And in those numbers, you're pretty much close to being about 400 to 500 grams of, milligrams of DHA.
Okay. Yeah. And, well, that's the ones I pick up at Costco.
Yeah, there we are.
400 to 200.
Good.
And, what about caffeine? How does that affect one's mood?
Basically, caffeine really does affect the brain. What's happening all day long, our neurons are firing in our brain. And when our neurons are firing, they release a byproduct called adenosine. And that's similar to what's called lactic acid buildup in your leg, so very similar pathway. And that adenosine actually attaches to receptors in the nervous system, and that makes us feel tired and calm. But what caffeine does, it displaces adenosine in the receptor, so it makes us feel energy. But too much of that is basically causes a sensitivity, so we want more and more caffeine. So we get this a drug-like effect from it, and we get to withdrawals, we don't have it.
I see. How long can the effects of caffeine last in terms of both the feeling elevated and can you crash later, and how much later can that happen?
Yeah, basically caffeine can last from 4 to 6 hours in the body, depending how much you're taking in. So that's comparing from coffee to green tea. Green tea is the more optimal amount. That's about 200 milligrams of caffeine, whereas coffee or large coffee could have anywhere from 600 to 800, which is a pretty big dose of caffeine.
I see. Yeah. And then, is there a bigger crash once that caffeine is out of the system, or are you back to normal?
You do crash. Basically, if I had a shot of Java, that does boost my energy levels up, but it strains the body, and it basically what's called adrenal fatigue. And we see that quite frequently in a lot of our clients. That means adrenals have to back up because we're so low energy that they get strained quite frequently.
The adrenals, yeah. That I'm going to quote Brendan Beiser and say I'm into monosyllabic words there. So, no, the adrenals, tell me about that.
Those are kind of like your adrenaline or your norepinephrine. Those are things that basically give you energy through the days.
Ah, so all those hormones that play a role in your energy level are called the adrenals.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
So it's just this umbrella term.
That we use.
I see. Great. Well, we are going to take a short break and we'll be back later speaking with Scott Andrews shortly. You're listening to Beautiful Minds Radio on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. Beautiful Minds, destigmatizing mental illness. And we're back with Scott Andrews talking about depression and nutrition. So, Scott, welcome back.
Thank you.
Should people with depression avoid some foods?
Yeah, so pretty much going back to what we talked about adrenals, we're looking at that we avoid processed foods because processed foods really strain adrenals as well as high sugar foods. So anything that's basically white, so your pastas, your crackers, your sugar, those are all high in sugar and they strain the adrenal glands.
I see.
That's one. The second one we're looking to avoid would be trans fats as well. Those kind of cause bad hardening of the cell wall. That means we can't get enough nutrients into the brain, into the body system. So we want to avoid trans fats. And those are things in your prepackaged foods, anywhere from potato chips down to your microwavable dinners.
But come on, Oreos have never been the same since they got rid of the trans fats.
That's true.
Right? So are certain sweeteners better than others in terms of keeping an even mood?
I'd probably try to stick away from certain sweeteners, especially things that are basically called aspartame or artificial sweeteners. They're about 100 times sweeter than regular sugar, and they play a really intricate role in the brain. They cross the blood-brain barrier, and they release what's called aspartic acid, and too much of this is called excitotoxin in the brain, and that can actually lead to cell death. So you want to avoid aspartame and start to use more natural sweeteners like maple syrups and honeys. And they actually are a way to decrease the amount of inflammation and free radicals of your body, so help to regenerate our cells.
And you mentioned some long-term effects of aspartame. Are there any short-term effects?
Yeah, we frequently see things such as headaches and fatigue as well from that. You also go through withdrawals. If you don't have your aspartame fix, you get actually increased aggression. It's very similar to that of a drug.
Aspartame. And that's the brand name for aspartame is NutraSweet?
Exactly.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And sucralose is very similar to that.
Sucralose,
yeah.
So that's the one in the yellow.
The man-made sugar.
That's the one that they say it's like sugar. So it's made from sugar. So that one's also bad.
Exactly, it's its cousin. It's just as deadly as aspartame.
Interesting. Okay, because in the States, the Center for Science and the Public Interest gave the okay for that one when it first came out. But
it was really designed for diabetics. That was because it didn't have effect on our blood sugar levels. But looking at long-term health in the brain, we try to avoid those.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. And what about stevia?
Stevia is a better one as well. It doesn't have any similar effects as aspartame. Sometimes it has an aftertaste that people don't like to taste it. So I would really go with something that has a more of a full body thing as a maple syrup or a honey.
Okay. Yeah. And high fructose corn syrup. Tell me a little bit about that. Getting away from artificial, well, in a way, it's not an artificial sweetener. It is a sweetener, but it's manufactured, right? Is that really bad for you?
Exactly. Going back to talking about corn in your first segment, that's based from corn. So it has a really profound effect on the body. It actually increases us getting metabolic syndrome, my first part I talked about. So definitely want to avoid those. That's one of the most consumed amount of calories in the American and Canadian population. Everything from drinks to pops to juices have these high fructose corn syrups.
And so how can high fructose corn syrup affect your mood?
Basically, it leads to a weight gain really easily. Also, that when we do have weight gain, we start not utilizing sugars very well. So that can have a profound effect as well.
I see. Yeah. And so certain mental health conditions affect our sleep. How does lack of sleep affect our nutrition?
Good question. I look at that when we basically have under the recommended sleep time, which is usually 7 to 9 hours a day, we start seeing an imbalance of hormones. And there are two hormones. One's called ghrelin, and that makes us overeat. And one's called leptin, that actually makes us feel satiety, which makes us feel full. So actually, those have a big effect. So we actually tend to eat more when we sleep less.
And I absolutely find that. I lose control when I don't have enough sleep. And I find I'm eating foods that, you know, I'm going for the potato chips or the terrible snacks.
Anything that's high in sugar. Sugar is the quickest form of energy. So you're looking for high sugary foods, unfortunately.
And is there a correlation between SAD and nutrition?
Yeah, it's actually a funny thing about it, especially being here in Vancouver. We look at SAD and we look at low levels of vitamin D. They have a huge correlation together. And basically means that we don't get a lot of vitamin D here in Vancouver. Whereas you might go to Florida, you might get 20,000 IUs. That's a big dose of vitamin D. But here we get a very small dose. You can get maybe 1,000 in 24 hours in Vancouver. So we get a very small amount. Basically, vitamin D helps us keep a better sense of well-being, helps us increase a good mood functioning.
I see. And so should people, and if you're not drinking milk, I guess milk would be a good way to get that, but otherwise where you... Is it added to any other foods?
Well, talking about milk, we actually don't absorb that much vitamin D from milk. We actually absorb more from our leafy greens and sesame seeds than we would from our dairy products.
So, but yet it's added to the dairy product, vitamin D fortified, but yet we're not absorbing it from that.
No, we're not from the pasteurization of dairy milk. We're not getting enough D, and our bodies don't recognize a form of vitamin D versus the more leafy green sources.
I see. So it's added before the pasteurization?
So it's after. It gets added after.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the natural form of vitamin D that's getting made from the dairy milk, it gets pasteurized, and they actually have to add it back in after for more synthetic version.
I see.
Yes.
So what about, do people tend to eat poorly when they're under stress?
Actually, most of us do. We call that more emotional eating. That usually happens in the evening times, especially if we skip meals or eat the wrong foods. We tend to basically binge on the wrong types. So we've got to really look at the quality of protein, because right now protein helps balance our blood sugar and helps us deal with emotional eating.
I see. And what's your approach to people who eat for comfort or when they're depressed?
It would be okay if you chose the right ones, but I'm guessing you're not going to choose the carrot stick over a bag of chips. But ideally that you've got system in place and you've done a good schedule of eating. So you've got great meals to choose from versus processed foods.
And then the last question is, do poor eating habits create a cycle?
When I think of that, a great researcher, her name was Tasha Campbell, medical doctor, looked at, it's called GAP syndrome. It's called the gut and psychology syndrome. It's basically how our brain and our digestive tract actually talk together. That means that if you have got bad bacteria in our gut, we don't absorb proper nutrients. So people that have mental disorders, we're looking at that they've got actually bad bacteria or what's called bowel dysbiosis. So by looking about changing that good bacteria, we start to have better fluctuations of mood. So she's saying that we should maybe place people on good probiotics and staying away from refined sugars.
Excellent. Yeah. Scott, well, thanks for coming on Beautiful Minds Radio.
Great. Thanks a lot.
And now we'll be talking with Baljeet Riot about her personal story with panic disorder. Her experience with a mental health condition led her to examine her approach to life and ultimately to her career. Hers is a story of overcoming a condition to live a fulfilling life. Welcome, Baljeet.
Hello.
So tell me, before you got panic attacks, how did you experience stress in your life?
I did a lot of repressing, and I didn't realize that I had depression. I was working a very stressful life in the architectural industry and working over hours, and how I dealt with it was I was masking a lot of my problems just by drinking alcohol and eating not so great healthy, unhealthy foods, and just stressing myself out and numbing it with foods and not unhealthy foods, I would say. And so I didn't really realize that I was having depression. I had no idea till the panic disorder came along.
I see.
Yeah.
So tell me about, I saw when Scott Andrews was talking about eating poor foods, bad food habits, and you were shaking your head, yes. And
I was yep.
That was you.
And
it masked your depression.
Totally masked my depression. I had no idea, because when you deal with emotions, the first thing that you do, if you're not conscious and aware of how to deal with them, you turn to either alcohol, you're going to turn to drugs, or you're going to turn to food to mask it. And so I was turning to food, comfort food, and also other substances as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. I understand it. I turn to food when I'm feeling down. It's the... So then... I understand you had depression first. Tell me about the depression.
Well, it was funny because I didn't realize I had the depression. I mean, I grew up in a very strict upbringing, and when I moved out of my home in 2003, I moved to Toronto from London, Ontario, and something there with regards to the move. It was like all my emotions started to come up. And I noticed that I was becoming more emotional, so I was trying to mask more of my problems. And no one knew that I had depression. I didn't even know I had depression. I thought that was normal. I thought it was normal to just cry once in a while.
Right.
And I always had a happy face, but I really masked it very well.
I see.
Yeah.
And then came the panic disorder. So what were your symptoms?
So my symptoms were sweaty palms. I had severe heart palpitations, and I felt like I was going to faint. It was the most scariest thing that I experienced when I first had a panic attack. I also was just sweaty and heated up all over. So it was just a very scary kind of feeling, especially when you don't know what it is.
Right. And so let's go back to that first panic attack. What was that like?
I still remember that day. Again, living in Toronto, I just started a job and was working long hours at an architect firm. And I remember coming home from this job, and there was also a heat wave, so it felt like 40 degrees. And I was on the streetcar, and all of a sudden, that's when I had my first experience of a panic attack. And I noticed a week prior, I was crying more, I was feeling more depressed, and it all came out. And then I was having the heart palpitations, the sweatiness. And then I got off the streetcar, because it was a little scary, I didn't know what it was, and got onto the subway, and I started to feel I had another panic attack. So because I was fearing another panic attack came along, and it just got stronger. So it was very scary for me. And when I came home, I just made sure I had like a comforting meal, which was like macaroni and cheese.
Oh, right.
To calm me down.
Right.
Yeah.
So what did professionals say about it?
Well, it was really funny. I can now laugh at it, but at the time, I went to 3 walk-in clinics, and all 3 doctors told me I just had a severe migraine problem. And they said my symptoms were all migraine-related, and they just suggested to take Tylenol or Advil. So I was taking Tylenol and Advil, and my symptoms as well were muscle tension. I told them I was feeling anxious, but none of that was taken in consideration. And then as well, that big time when I had another big panic attack, I ended up going to the hospital. And again, same thing.
But eventually you were diagnosed. So how did things proceed after the diagnosis?
What ended up happening was when I was diagnosed, I was diagnosed at the hospital to a severe panic disorder, or not a severe panic disorder, severe migraine problem.
Okay.
And I spent 10 hours in the hospital, and it didn't really make sense to me. And both my parents and I, my parents just so happened to be at the hospital. They both kind of knew that it wasn't a migraine problem. So we went back home to London, Ontario, to a family doctor, and I told him all of my symptoms. And he said, this is nothing migraine-related. This is a panic disorder. And then he had put me on Celexa, which is an SSRI.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And then you were on that for a year, and then you decided to go off that?
Yeah.
Why?
I went back to one of the walk-in clinics that I had a regular doctor in Toronto that I would go to receive my medication, the Celexa. And she had told me that I'd probably have to take this for the rest of my life. So when she had told me that, something triggered inside of me, and I was like, no, this doesn't sit right with me. This doesn't make sense, and I don't believe that you need to take medication for the rest of your life. So what I started to do was wean myself off of it. I was taking half a pill, and it wasn't really doing much, and she was aware of it, and she said, well, you're either on it or off it. And I said, okay, I'm going to go off of it, and that's when I decided to go to a naturopath because I wanted to heal in an alternative way.
I see. And how did you feel after going off the medication?
I felt amazing. I did gain about 30 pounds by being on the medication. I lost a lot of sensations. It really masked a lot of things. When you're on medications, there's a lot of disconnect with your, I call it your brain synapses and your heart center and feeling. So what ended up happening is that I had another, I had a healing crisis by going to a naturopath, and a healing crisis is when you're clearing a lot of old emotion. What has to happen is that it needs to come up, it needs to purge. So all that old stuff that I've been masking with the food in the past and the medication on top of that all came up. And then I had to deal with that. And then I also found a homeopathic doctor through that.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. And we actually have to wrap it up. And that was a fascinating story. And
Thank
I really appreciate your coming on, Baljeet.
Thank you.
That was Baljeet Riot's personal story of a triumph over a mental health condition, panic disorder. If you want to know more about her new career, you can check out her website at lotusdestiny.com. And now Dr. Chris Gorman and Brendan Beiser on our topics from today's show.
Brendan, we're at color commentary talking about what's been happening. We've had an amazing show today. Two great speakers, one on nutrition and mental health, and also the Baljeet talking about panic disorder. Tell me your thoughts.
Well, first of all, Richard thought we might be interesting in this segment. Tell him not to get his hopes up.
Oh, absolutely.
And then did you? I never thought I would hear this, but as he quoted me, I feel I should only return the favor. Oreos have never been the same since they got rid of trans fat. Richard G. Dalton Jr., June 19th, 7:38 p.m. Amazing. Now they're just bustling full of natural goodness.
Well, yeah, I think the Oreo cookie is, you know, it's got its own food group, really. People are such big fans.
And he plugged Costco at the same time. It was amazing. I mean, see how he's working that? We're gonna get paid for this yet. He's working on a sponsorship deal behind our backs.
You just watch that
Dalton Jr. fella.
Oh, yeah, I know what he's like. Listen, let's get back to the show. I want to talk about your thoughts about panic and what Baljeet was talking about.
Well, once again, I always find when somebody shares their personal story like that, it's inspiring because it requires a certain amount of vulnerability to come out and say, like, this happened to me, and it wasn't comfortable, and I'm inspired by stuff like that. I thought now something that you probably wouldn't recommend that she did was she weaned herself off of her medication, which worked out for her. But I'm guessing that you wouldn't recommend that to everyone across the board.
Well, I wouldn't. I guess what I'd say is I agree with her. I think that if it's a transient phenomena and you taper off the med, I mean, I don't think anybody should be told you have to take this medication forever the first time that you're prescribed something. I think that at some arbitrary point, an exploration of can someone get by without the medication is a good idea. And if it's not working out, well, then, you know, it's back to the drawing board. But such a big part of treatment in mental health has to include talking therapy so people can make changes, as Baljeet was talking about. This panic arose at a time that was, you know, a stressful point in her life and ultimately served to guide her towards doing a different kind of work.
You know, I had a panic attack myself once, probably, she said she was living in Toronto, and this happened to me in Toronto. I was going in for, you know, one of the bigger auditions that I probably ever had, and at least that's what I'd cooked up in my brain. And by the time I got to the door of this audition, and it was down to myself and not many others to be, you know, a regular on a television show. So it's a good thing I didn't get it, because I wouldn't be able to do this show had that happened. But that's beside the point. I got so stressed and so panicked that when I went into the room, I completely froze. And when I came out of the room, I was a wreck. I was completely beside myself with concern. And quite frankly, when I was riding home, I really didn't care if I had gotten hit by a streetcar. I wouldn't have minded. I was that, you know, just annoyed and and out of it.
It sounds awful, Brendan. I can't believe you got an audition, though.
Well, that to me was just impressive, too. That's just having an agent that, at the time, she didn't know me. She actually believed in my abilities. Now she has a better idea, you know, let's be honest. But what it did, though, where she found a new career, I actually found therapy. And I turned to a therapist, and I sought help, and it was immediate, and it made a big difference. And now I have a support system in place such that if I start to have that feeling come up again, I can just make a phone call or two while I'm in the midst of it, and I can get through it now.
Well, that's great to hear. I mean, I've suffered with anxiety my entire life. I got to tell you, I worry about everything, and I sometimes think I must have become a psychiatrist so I could learn from my patients, which is exactly what's happened, I find it so helpful to try, as I encourage my, you know, people to do, is focus on the here and now, which can quell anxiety to an extent. But to hear that, you know, you had a panic attack, I mean, that truly is probably one of the most frightening. I mean, it's obviously about fright, but it's just a terrible experience for people.
I'm surprised to hear that you have that you worry about everything. You have it all, as far as I'm concerned. A beautiful wife, an enormous house, a terrific dog, kids. I mean, you're successful, man. What do you have to worry about?
You know, it's all a facade, Brendan. Well, I don't want to get into that now, but I, you know, people worry about stuff if they think too much and if they get too focused on the future That's not the only cause of it, obviously, but it's a big part of life. And probably when you went for the audition, there was a big part of the what if, you know. One, if you fail at the audition, which unfortunately you did. And then the second one is, what if I succeed? I mean, think of all the implications of that for people that can cause anxiety.
It's true. Speaking of what if, I'm just thinking, what if I had your PIN number?
Well, Brendan, I'm still remembering the time I lent you my car and you returned it on empty. You know, it's just, I mean, that's what friends are for, I guess, is to believe in people that can occasionally disappoint you.
I just thought you might like to experience some anxiety like I do.
Well, and that's the kind of person you are. You're a man of generous spirit. I want to also talk about the diet, the nutritional discussion. That was important. I mean, we need to be eating better, but I think I'm so glad Richard brought up how difficult it can be if you're not feeling well. I guess another argument for destigmatizing mental illness so that people can get the help they need rather than, you know, a bag of chips and a six pack of beer.
Listen, I'm going to chew less gum. I chew so much gum. I like gum, but after listening to Scott talk about aspartame, it's like that's just. I must be out of my mind to be chewing as much gum as I do.
Well, you know, I was wondering about this gum chewing that you do, because the other day I saw your jaws are huge. It's like a werewolf or something like that. It's actually frightening to me. I would cut back on the gum. I think that's a really good idea.
Well, that's actually steroids.
That's steroids. Oh, I see. Okay. My mistake. My mistake.
That's it. But I found that also interesting. Did you know, now that we're just flipping around, that one out of 113 Americans suffer panic disorders? Did you know that?
That's a lot of people, Brendan. Again, we've talked about some important issues today. Panic disorder, nutrition, and mental health. You know, overeating, obesity. It's been a great show, and I give almost all the credit to Stephen, our sound man, but I'm going to give some to you and Richard, and yeah, I'll take the rest. Oh, and also Joelle, and I'm going to turn it back to Richard.
Listen, we played some great music today too. Don't forget about Will.
Absolutely.
He chews a lot of gum too.